FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and the date is October 5th, 2016. And just like there is a hurricane coming threatening the Florida coast, there is a hurricane threatening the world economy. And where is it going to make ground first? Where is it going to strike first? That's a good question. With us, Jason Burak, WallStreetForMainStreet.com. And Jason, it's been a while. Welcome back.
Thanks, Kerry. I'm glad to be back. Congratulations on your success.
Hey, Will. Well, hey, congratulations on yours as well. I know you've been busy. Site is booming, and that's great news. And not a moment too soon, because so many of you out there just really have no idea where to turn, don't know what is going on and what's going to happen next. And it's just like the trail of the hurricane. They don't know where it's going to make landfall, whether it's going to be in South Carolina, North Carolina, or in Florida. But nonetheless, the effects of the hurricane are being felt. And it's the same thing with the global financial tsunami. We're feeling the effects now. Sometimes it goes away from the economy and you don't feel it as much. And other times like now, like Deutsche Bank, like what's happening with precious metals, you feel it. But the fact that it exists and it's happening, there's no question about that.
Yeah, Doug Casey's analogy is that we've left the eye of the hurricane and now we're back in the other wall of the hurricane. My analogy that I've come up with is that I think we're in an economic minefield. I think that's more accurate. You know, we've been unknowingly kidnapped, bags been put over our heads, and we've been dragged into a minefield, and we don't know where all the mines are. We can see some of them. Some of them are visible to us. Some of them are under the surface, and if we take a step, it could blow off our leg. So I think that's a better analogy, that we're in a minefield. So there's so many problems. We have the European banking system problem. If the oil price goes any lower, we're going to have very large amount of bankruptcies. The wipeout we should have had in the oil market when oil hit 29, then it was financially engineered back up for a bunch of different reasons so bankruptcies wouldn't have to be called. You know, we could go down the list of all the different problems. We have so many trillions of dollars in government bonds that are negative interest rates. And then, you know, to top all of this off, when you would think with all of these problems, Kerry, with Deutsche Bank, that gold and silver should be doing well, they're smashed down again. But, you know, any drop in the paper price that's a large and pronounced correction, we know for a fact, based on past experiences, that the Chinese, the People's Bank of China and private Chinese citizens, the deeper the correction, the more they're going to come in and come buy large physical orders of gold and silver.
Yeah, well, we've seen it over and over again, and the rest of the world is doing it as well. Don't forget India and so many other central banks picking up gold at a moment's notice. I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah, it's definitely obvious, but you know, the manipulation, it unfortunately, it seems like it's still getting worse before it gets better. But we got to that point in December of 2015 where we got to the paper prices in U.S. dollars, where literally the miners were basically on their last legs at 1075 gold and around 13 silver. So the miners had been able to try to figure out ways to cut costs. They were out of ways to creatively raise capital. So basically, they were going to start shutting down mines, or they were going to go bankrupt very soon when we got to that point. We've had a nice rally for a while. There was a lot of, you know, Johnny come latelys, trend traders who don't like gold and silver at all, but because the chart was good, they were piling on like crazy. And you know how markets work. So when everyone thinks that gold and silver are going to continue to go straight up, the market, especially a bull market, is going to, like a bucking bronco or, you know, bull at the rodeo, it's going to throw people off. So obviously, I think a lot of this correction is paper price manipulation, because when there is counterparty risk in the banking system like Deutsche Bank, and it's so large, obviously gold and silver should be doing well. But, you know, the way, if you've paid attention to the gold and silver markets for a long time, you know that when gold and silver should be going up with events like this, even in 2008, it went down first.
Oh, yeah. We saw that, went down to 720. That was the bottom. I just happened to be fortunate enough to pick some up at that price, although the premiums were pretty high. So, yeah, when you see this happen, you can't really read anything long term into it, because you just know that it just pretty much is going to act contrary to what most people think it's going to do. I was at the Sprott Resource Conference back in August, and it was sold out. There were a bunch of mining companies there. Everybody was optimistic. And that was really a bit cause for alarm there. I mean, I wasn't overly alarmed because I just felt the couple of cycle guys that I follow were really putting out a warning that that the fourth quarter for gold and silver was going to be very volatile, and that it was going to be a dangerous time to be investing. And now, how much lower can it go? Perhaps it'll go a little bit lower, but the final analysis is that eventually it's going to head in the right direction. We know that it's going to head up. There really is nothing else to hedge the risk here as an insurance policy. I mean, what else is there here, Jason?
Yeah, there's not a lot of other options, especially stocks on mainstream U.S. exchanges. There are some rental properties in select cities in the United States, but those areas have to have job growth. And there's just not a lot of job growth, especially high paying full time jobs. Now that we've had the shale boom go bust in a lot of those areas, and there's been massive firings. But I would say actually for certain gold and silver companies, Kerry, this correction in gold and silver is actually really good. So for the gold royalty and streaming company, so your Franco Nevadas, your Royal Golds, your Sandstorm Golds, your Silver Wheatons, your Osisko Gold Royalties, those are really the five large ones with a lot of cash flow and diversification and pretty solid balance sheets. Those companies have been waiting for a dip in the paper metals price where the miners couldn't raise a lot of equity and they could come in and do another round of deals. So if the correction stays for a little bit while longer, I think we're going to see those large companies. They did a lot of deals in the last few years when the metals prices were low, when base metal miners and also who had gold and silver byproduct were willing to sell streams to clean up their balance sheets, or even gold and silver miners who had silver byproduct were willing to sell a silver stream to clean their balance sheet. I think we're going to see another round of deals from those guys. So those guys, that business model, when there's actually a major correction, that actually means that they can add more cash flow that's good long term. So for your listeners out there, this is why, because of the volatility from the paper price manipulation in the gold and silver markets, this is why you don't buy your whole position at once. This is why you should I've been saying this for a while now, should mentally prepare yourself for a lot of volatility up and down in this market. And you should keep cash on hand just in case, you know, even if the experts are going to say, oh, gold and silver going up. I was also at a Sprott event last week in Toronto at Sprott Incorporated headquarters in downtown Toronto. They flew me up there to meet them and get presentations. And their top gold fund manager, Paul Wong, he was telling us that in his opinion, and he's a quant guy, so he looks at almost all the analysis there with his models, that gold and silver was probably going to go sideways for another couple months, and then it was going to go up big towards the end of the year. So, I mean, people get it wrong even when they have all this access to data and research. But, you know, quality companies like Sprott Inc., which has a lot of exposure to precious metals, that's in our precious metals portfolio that we have for consulting clients. That's a top tier company along with the five other royalty and streaming companies that I mentioned. Sprott Inc. has no debt, 5% dividend yield, and, you know, they have good exposure to precious metals. So they will be, you know, doing deals for private placements. They will get warrants on those. They will help their clients get those. And they will be doing, you know, mining financing with some debt a little bit for low cost producers who need a little bit of debt either for an acquisition. And they're making a lot of free cash flow from those physical metals trusts, the Sprott Physical Silver and Sprott Physical Gold Trust. So those are ways to play this on the dip. In addition to just accumulating physical precious metals for savings. So I think, you know, this bull market for gold and silver miners and gold silver companies, it's very far from over. People ask me, when is the bull market going to end? Give me a price target on gold and silver. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, and I ask them, well, tell me when the central bankers, Kerry, are going to stop their craziness. In fact, yeah, all the craziness that has already come, Kerry, it is only getting crazier. If you read the speeches that they are preparing, given to the public, if you read their white papers that they are putting out talking about how there could be negative 9% interest rates or inflation targeting. Janet Yellen was just in front of Congress and someone asked her if the Federal Reserve can buy stocks. And she was like, well, other central banks are allowed to buy stocks, but we're not allowed to buy stocks yet. You know, acting like they should have that privilege. Larry Sanders, that's a comedian.
Might as well be. Might as well be. Freudian yeah, slip, but I like
that
it.
That was a Freudian slip.
Larry Summers,
who's one of the main Keynesian scumbags.
You got to watch yourself there, Jason.
Huh?
Got to watch yourself there. Your true feelings are going to come out.
Yeah, so Larry Summers, not only is he lobbying for a $2 trillion infrastructure spending program, God, which, by the way, both political candidates have basically
green stamped. They love it. Yeah.
Yeah. They love it. It's going to create infrastructure jobs. Donald Trump has talked about how the airports and bridges are third world country here. And Hillary Clinton is running TV commercials about her infrastructure plan. It's basically going to be a copycat of what Larry Summers is suggesting. Larry Summers is also suggesting that
it could be Larry David, too. What's Larry David's economic plan? I'm curious to find out.
Larry David's going to be forever associated now with his Bernie Sanders impression, though.
Yeah, I can't tell the two apart, honestly. So if you were to put them in a room together and I had to pick one from the other, I don't think I could do it at this point, Jason. So yeah, infrastructure spending, it's just a little gift to the unions, and we know what that's about. We need infrastructure spending, but we got to get this budget totally under control here and get rid of all the crap that's in it. And Trump has made allusions towards doing that, but he's the only one.
Yeah, and who knows if he'll actually follow through on anything he says. I mean, that's the thing. We don't know. He says he's a deal maker. We don't know if the elites are going to come to him with certain types of deals to compromise. We know that Reagan made a lot of promises. I know Trump has patterned a lot of his political philosophy off of Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan, when he won election, he tried to, you know, defund a lot of the bureaucracy. He tried to reduce that and grow the U.S. economy and create jobs. But the bureaucrats basically, and those are the ones who really run the country. A lot of Americans, unfortunately, Carrie, still think the president has this enormous amount of power. The president has maybe certain powers for declaring a war or things like that, but the president does not run a lot of the country day to day. It's the massive amount of bureaucrats here in Washington, D.C.
The deep state, the dark state, whatever you call it. So, yeah, he's definitely an unknown, but hey, I think you can judge somebody by their enemies. I think that's the best way to judge them. And I like the enemies that he's made. I don't know about you.
That's a good point. You got the regular mainstream Republicans, Fox News, the Koch brothers,
the media,
the Bush family, all against him.
The media.
Yeah.
The media
has been against him from day one. They thought he was a joke. But I mean, you know, now that he's gotten this far, I think they're just shocked.
Yeah, well, what do they know? I mean, they're a bunch of people pretending to know something who don't know anything. I mean, Ailes, forget about all this other grief, told Rupert Murdoch, this was in a story somewhere, I don't know if it's true or not, but I trust that guy's political instincts based upon his history. He said to Murdoch, don't go up against Trump. He's going to be the nominee. All right. This is when Trump first announced his candidacy. So don't antagonize him. Don't challenge him. He's going to be the nominee. And it's interesting because Fox, where he gets somewhat of a deal, somewhat of a hearing, half of the people on Fox are for him, half are against. And I guess that's about as good a deal as he's going to get. So the election, is it a disruptive force or factor in the markets now? Or is it just baked into the cake here, Jason?
It's a disruptive force if Trump wins. It can be like Brexit. The Federal Reserve, if Trump wins, the Federal Reserve may raise interest rates and let the stock market crash temporarily. Then they can blame it on Trump. And then he only gets one term. They could blame all the mess that was created long before Trump. They could blame it on Trump. So that's my theory. But I've also heard the rumor, Carrie, that if you're a large Wall Street investment bank employee and you're caught voting for Trump, you're fired. So yeah. I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard it from a couple different sources.
We know that Goldman Sachs said you can't donate money to his campaign. That is a fact. So it's not too much of a stretch. But how are they going to know if you voted for him or not? In theory, at least, the voting booth is secret. Your vote that you cast in that booth is still secret, as far as we know. But hey, they got so much demographic data and everything else, big data, who knows what they know and what they don't know. So as far as economy, Deutsche Bank. Are they going to allow Deutsche Bank to collapse, or are they going to nationalize Deutsche Bank and the rest of the European banks here, Jason? My belief, personally, I'll just express it, and then you comment, is that all of the European banks will be nationalized because nobody wants to be known by history as the political leader who allowed the world economic system to collapse.
They will be bailed out covertly, backdoor bailouts. They will be bailed out through the European Central Bank via currency swap lines from the Federal Reserve. So the U.S. taxpayer, the U.S. saver, anyone holding U.S. dollars will, in order to promote a stronger global financial system, the Federal Reserve, on our behalf, of course, to protect ourselves from ourselves, will do this. And they will print trillions of dollars, interest-free loans. They won't really have to ever pay them back for the most part. We know for a fact that these have actually already been done in massive quantities since 2008. We know this from the one-time partial audit that Ron Paul's done of the Federal Reserve. So there may be partial bank nationalizations, Kerry. The politicians, though, so if you're in Germany, you're Angela Merkel, and you're trying to get reelected, it's very politically unpopular to nationalize Germany right now. In fact, with the derivatives losses from Deutsche Bank, and we don't know the exact number of them, Germany might not be able to absorb those losses anyway. So there's really only one global entity on the entire planet that has that type of liquidity injections, and that's the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is unaudited. There is no transparency. And we know for a fact now, with the one-time partial audit of the Federal Reserve, we know from other experts like Jim Rickards, who estimates that over $30 trillion in liquidity injections has been injected into the global financial system since 2008. So we know that these things are going on. I know from my source, who was actually at an IMF meeting, they're taking notes. This was there was tons of mainstream financial media press there. None of them released any of this stuff. It was an IMF meeting in 2014. And he told me he told me, Jason, look, there's all these representatives here from major central banks, from treasury departments of major global economies. And they have mentioned the phrase currency swap hundreds of times. And yet, you know, if you actually believe what the Federal Reserve is saying, they claim to only have $22 million in outstanding currency swaps on their balance sheet. I was telling an Austrian school guy, a libertarian guy who's worked on Wall Street, about what I heard about the currency swaps. And a couple of these guys were questioning what I was saying. They were like, oh, the Federal Reserve says they only have $22 million outstanding on this. Oh, currency swaps in the past, they were only short-term loans. They were only small amounts. They had to be paid back immediately. Well, here's what has happened, in my opinion, based on the research I have collected, the sources I have interviewed. I've interviewed people like Dr. Pippa Malmgren, who have spoke to Federal Reserve members off the record. She had dinner with Federal Reserve members recently, and she admitted in her new book, Signal, that their economic models are totally broken. These are Federal Reserve members below Janet Yellen living in Washington, D.C., who say inflation is out of control. It is super high. But, you know, they're not up the totem pole like the people like the Federal Reserve Bank member in Minneapolis saying that we're fighting deflation. There is no inflation problem. So my opinion is that they will continue to do these currency swaps because they do not want the pitchforks coming out. So they are worried about bank failures more. They are worried about deflation more, and they really don't care how much inflation, because most people won't even notice. And the ones who do notice will blame capitalism rather than, you know, the central banks, which are causing it, or the corrupt governments giving out crony contracts in all different industries that are way over budget and never produce very little useful things. So I think, you know, they're going to keep coming up with more and more covert ways to print the money. One of these things, Kerry, one of the major reasons for the negative interest rates is they want to tax people a lot more. There is a great interview. I encourage your listeners to go to the McIlvaney Weekly commentary from a couple weeks ago. Carmen Reinhart was interviewed there. She wrote a book with Ken Rogoff years ago after the 2008 crash. And she actually admitted, she was candid, which a lot of these PhD Keynesian economists, you know, it's more of an act or their bad ideology. It's almost like a religion to them. And she actually admitted, you know, the government's going to come up with more and more ways to pick your pocket through inflation and taxes. And she was worried about the future because of her children and the lifestyle she'll have in retirement because of what she sees coming, how diabolical and desperate the central bankers and governments are going to be going forward with their monetary and fiscal policies.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take a little issue with you because I think we're reaching the point where the ability of the central banks to just do this, Federal Reserve in particular, I'm not sure about. if they can keep doing it. But hey, we're going to know soon enough. They're boxing themselves in and they're losing credibility. So how can they keep doing it? I don't know. Will they be able to? I'm not sure. But we're heading for very interesting times. And Jason, so your site, where do we go? How do we connect with you?
Sure. We have a popular YouTube channel that has over 2.2 million views. It's growing very quickly, over 12,000 subscribers. That's Wall Street for Main Street, WALSTFORMAINST on YouTube. That's the same website, WallStreetForMainStreet.com. You can either type in WALSTFORMAINST.com or the abbreviated one. Both of them work now. We own both domain names. And we're gonna keep growing the podcast business and interviewing other experts and getting perspective on what's happening on the global economy and investing. We have a similar, similar mission statement to you about surviving and thriving, because we think, you know, with what the elites are trying to do, whether they're central bankers or politicians, they're constantly changing the rules and it's unfair. But, you know, in the world we live in now, the rules are going to keep changing and it's going to be very difficult and stressful for most people. So we're doing our best to help out. And we're also trying to get our educational technology company funded, which one of the main goals is to offer people an affordable business and investing education so they don't have to go into heavy amounts of debt from a mid-tier or lower business school. They can get those equivalent skills from successful people on a much more affordable price. So we're trying to get that company funded.
And that's a really worthy goal. I wish you the best in it. I think it's something that's really needed and will go a long way towards helping people not go into hock and help you get the skills that you need to really do something important and to be successful, because not having debt is really very important in the new economy. Anyway, Jason, as always, we'll have a link to your site in the show notes of this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. It's always great speaking with you. We'll talk to you again real soon. Hey, by the way, check out the new site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Make sure you opt in for our newsletter. I'm going to be getting out of my house as soon as it's boarded up, and I will spend some time in a hotel writing this week's newsletter and talking about hurricanes, both economic and weather related. And Jason, it's always great speaking with you. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Gary. I always enjoy coming on your show, and keep up the great work.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.